Welcome to Iteration, a podcast about programming, development, and design. Hey, my name is John, and I'm a software developer based out of Los Angeles. And as always, I am joined... I dropped something. As always, I am joined by my awesome co-host, JP. Hey, JP.
How's it going, John? My name is JP. I'm a software engineer at a... I almost said a tech real estate startup. It just flows right off the tongue. But if you've been paying attention to any of the last episodes... is no longer a tech real estate startup. I am currently working for a new cool hip startup that is in it's in stealth mode. So I don't even know how much I can even say. But I think we alluded to this a little bit earlier. But
I think you alluded to that you were interviewing or in final stages with them. So that's awesome. You got a new full time gig locked down. That's great. It's so interesting because it's like a very much what we're talking about today, which today we're talking about onboarding into a new code base. So how has that been going, getting onboarded into a new code base and a new team overall? And maybe you can give a couple sentences about just what you're doing with the company, like what code stacks are you working in? What's your role look like over there?
Sorry, you froze for a second.
Okay, cool. We'll rewind a bit. There's an edit point here. I'll clap. So you were mentioning that you were interviewing for the stealth mode startup. So it seems like that closed. That's awesome. What are you doing there? And what kind of tech stack are you working in? Like, what's your role look like over there?
Yes. So I was hired actually to write Vue. Can you believe that? So their tech stack is Rails on the back end. It's a Rails only API. We're using GraphQL. It's like baked into Rails. So there's like one GraphQL controller, which is kind of weird to see.
Whoa.
Perusing through the code base and it's like, all right, let's check out the routes. All right, let's check out the controllers. Oh, there's one controller and it's just for GraphQL. And then on the front end, we have a SPA, which is just a Vue app that talks directly to the Rails API. So there's a lot of new stuff there. I have worked with GraphQL in the past. Not to the extent that I'm probably working with GraphQL now, but that I was basically brought on to give support for the front end, which is where they need a lot of support right now. So a lot of the back end infrastructure is done, at least to the point where they're like a couple sprints ahead of the front end, which is like a good thing. I think that's what you ideally want. So I'm just coming in helping with the velocity of the front end team. It's basically myself, two other engineers who are full-time, including the CTO, and then we have two contractors who provide, they're like staff augmentation. So they're contractors, but they're not like outsourced devs.
Right.
But I guess they are. I don't know.
Yeah, I see what you mean by that. That's cool. It's crazy because I feel like it's fun. We just did this JavaScript framework episode a couple episodes ago, and you were like, unfamiliar with Vue, and now on this episode, I think it's the next episode, you are a full-time job working in mainly Vue. How has that transition been? How are you liking Vue overall?
You know, it's just like more JavaScript. I think it's kind of insane, actually, that because you referred me to this company, but I was very straight up and honest with them. I was like, look, I'm a Rails developer. I have done a lot of front end in my last couple of jobs because that's just what the business needs. Is there's usually like some complex interaction.
You did a shitload of React development. So, I mean,
yeah,
you definitely have that experience.
And I was like, look, I'm going to be honest with you. I love writing Rails and I love writing React, I guess. I mostly only write React and vanilla JavaScript.
I love React, I guess. That's what everybody says, I think.
Yeah. And then they were just like, oh, our stack is Vue. And it's like, they just totally put their trust in me that like, hey, we think you can learn this, like come on board and do this with us. And overall, I think like, I've hopefully proved that I can be productive with Vue very, very quickly. I spent like the weekend before just like watching a ton of like Udemy courses and like front end master's courses. Just onboarding myself, like reading documentation.
Yeah.
And overall, it's been, I think like learning a new language is difficult, but when you're in an existing project that's using it, it's much easier to see in like practice. Cause like you can watch YouTube all day and you could watch Udemy all day and like learn from the docs. But until you're like actually seeing things in practice, it's much different than making another to-do app because those are easy, right?
Mm-hmm. I think not having contrived examples, but real examples makes it so much easier to get your head around a code base. But it's a testament to your skills and to Vue's learning curve that in a weekend, you're able to onboard into not only a new framework, but a new code base and get productive in the first 2 weeks. That's fucking crazy, man. That's really impressive across the board. But what I'm curious, which do you think it is? Do you think it's your skill or do you think it's Vue or a combination? Like, where is that on the scale, you think? Putting you on the spot.
I think it's a combination of both. So we're using this library called Vuex, which is basically just a global store, which is basically just Redux. And I think because I've seen Redux before, I know the pattern very well. It's just like Flux architecture, right?
Right.
And then also because of the GraphQL implementation was like very similar to Opendoor's GraphQL implementation with our React Native app, I've just like seen the patterns already. And so it was easy to reverse engineer things, I guess, and understand like the data flow that it was. I don't know. And it's also a testament to like how easy it is to onboard with Vue too, because things just like work as you expect. I think once you've seen enough JavaScript front end stuff, it's kind of, it's all kind of just the same thing in a different package.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a perfect jumping off point into our subject today, which is onboarding into a new code base. And like I said, you were able to onboard into a new framework and a new code base and a new company in context really quickly. So I think you've got some fresh tips off the top of your head here. But so getting into the subject, you know, as a contractor or a new hire onboarding into a new code base, I have limited experience here because I would say about 75% of my projects were greenfield, meaning I wrote the first line of code to the last line of code on that project. And I wasn't having to take on existing code bases. I have definitely worked in some existing code bases and contributed to them, but it's always been a smaller amount of the work I've done. I don't know if that's lucky or not lucky to always have to be like the 0-1 person. That's kind of how I've always sold myself. Like, I'll get things off the ground and get like the initial definition started. But I'm curious, in your experience, JP, how much have you contributed to existing code bases versus starting fresh? What does your ratios look like in your career thus far?
I feel like aside from this like sports betting app that I'm working on, all of the code bases I've worked on have been like me jumping into a new code base. Like first with WizTutor, because that was yours. Yeah. I guess the mobile app that I wrote for WizTutor.
You did the mobile app from scratch, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say that it's like leaning heavily towards me having to onboard onto a new code base.
Into existing code bases, not creating new code bases. Okay, cool. So then you can definitely speak with more experience. But in my experience, like starting to get into the subject here, my first recommendation is to really understand the domain, the business model of the company that you're getting into. Like what the hell this company does. If it's a real estate app, understand the fundamentals and words of real estate and what's used there. If it's a car sharing app, really understand their business and the different types of users and context this app is used, like how the actual process flow of the real world system works or the data flow there works. I think that's the first tip I could give in onboarding a new code base is like understand the business domain a little bit. What do you think, JP? Where would you start off?
Yeah, I think I would start off by first of all, seeing if there's any documentation, right? Because
yeah, of course.
You would hope that there's like a README of some sort or there's like some kind of documentation. Just about like processes and all that good stuff. I think gathering as much context as humanly possible helps, especially with the domain. So when I first got my my job offer for this new company, I basically emailed the like CEO and CTO, and I was like, "Hey, give me some resources on this domain because like I know the problem that we're trying to solve, but like I don't really know much about it. Like I didn't even know this was a problem for." Data analysts. It's a tool for data analysts, right? And so I was like, hey, I found a couple of these articles. Let me know if I'm going in the right direction. So that was like step one for me because, you know, we talk about this a lot in domain-driven design. I forgot what that word was that we said every episode. It was like shared language or something, right?
Yeah, I think it was shared language, yeah.
Yeah, it was like shared language. So like that language exists in code bases too. So once you start seeing things that are like, oh, this is kind of weird, you might think it's one thing, but it's not another. So we have this idea of a stream. And it's like a stream in the context of like, engineering is much different than what we're calling a stream. And so, you know, things like that could even get confusing. I think this new company that I joined has done a really good job at documenting the differences of of like what our shared language should be and like the differences between like what they are in the world of tech and what they are in the, like the real mm-hmm. world, which is a good thing. So I think having all of that context before jumping into a code base is like an absolute must.
Yeah, absolute must. And I think it goes without saying, like you said, read the doc. So when you're reading a README, what kinds of things are you looking out for? Are you mostly looking for what are the data models? What is the domain? Or are you more looking for how do I open a PR in this code base and not look like an idiot? Like the processes within that company, or are you looking for all of it?
Yeah, I guess the answer is like all of it, but yes, very specifically like the domain models. So I had like an onboarding session with my CTO, and the first question I asked him was like, can we just open up the models and like in the Rails models? And can we just sort of like walk through what each of these things are and like what purpose they serve?
Right. What are the main entities in the system? What are the main God objects? That's one of the tips I have here is like find the God objects. There's always certain concepts or models within a code base that attract a lot of the code or are constantly referenced. And it's oftentimes like the user model, or for an e-commerce, it's always the order object, always has all of these entities attached to it. But every code base has those specific objects that are really like throughout the kind of enmeshed in the entire code base. So keep an eye out for those ones that are always referenced again and again. I think something that you wrote here, JP, which was a thought I had as well, which is review any pull requests that other people have opened and been merged. Like that helps you understand kind of the scope of PRs they open, what's the language around POs. I extended that to also like look at issues or tickets. Like if they use Jira or any other ticketing system, go look through what's been closed and what closed well. And you can even ask whoever you're onboarding with, like, hey, can you give me some examples of like one ticket versus a PR that went through your entire development lifecycle so I can understand your current development lifecycle? What is the initial request versus the first PR versus what gets pushed live and how does that work? I think that can be really, really useful to try to get the shared language and culture of a team for sure.
Yeah, and it's also cool to see like what the processes are around like pull requests. I did this thing where I like hopped onto a pull request and I like did a little bit of code review. I just like left some comments because it had like touched some files that I was also touching, and I was like, oh hey, you know, a couple considerations here, mental note to myself that I need to like update this once you merge this. And then I didn't like realize that there's like a different kind of etiquette, right? Like you should only really be reviewing pull requests if you're the one tagged to review it, because then otherwise like it just takes much longer to get through the like pipeline, right? Mm-hmm. But anyways,
that's not the case of every team. So I think it's good to call out, like understand the etiquette of the new company you're walking into. Like what's the workflow here around this?
Yeah, totally. But even if you don't comment on pull requests, I think it's like a good thing to just like look at them and then see mm-hmm. like the ones that closed, and see like the different comments that were like left on pull requests, because that also gives you some like pretty good insight as to, you know, the kinds of comments that people are like gonna leave when you submit your first pull request, which I think is a cool thing too.
For sure. And like it sets a little bit of an expectation there. I think one of the things that I've done when they exist, good Lord, is reviewing tests. It's a really good place to start to understand the golden path, especially if there's like integration or feature tests, which is like log in as a user, search for an item, add item to cart. It's like, oh, okay, I understand the main code base and like the supposed process flow of the system. The other, I think this is a pretty hot tip because I've had a lot of good luck with this in onboarding into other code bases, especially as a consultancy, because like I was brought in to be a tech expert. And so when I've onboarded into projects, I have done a really good job of writing docs as I've gone to like get my new context really well documented. And then my first pull request is always an update to the README. Like here's all the shit that I wish was in the README when I started that I know now. I could not recommend that more strongly. Maybe wait like a week, like hold that PR back so you like make sure you're not saying anything that's really stupid or obvious. But I have had good luck there in like calling out some specific documentation or updating docs. Things get stale, and when you onboard, that fresh set of eyes is actually an asset, not a liability. Like trust me, I've been on the receiving end of that, like having a team member onboard and open that PR that's like, hey, this specific setup script no longer works because of this update, like I updated it here. It's so nice to get a PR like that that, you know, just like tidies up and tightens up the docs. So that's definitely a hot tip there. All right. So we've been talking a lot about I'm coming into a new code base, but let's pivot and change the conversation the other way. I want to bring someone into my code base. So I want to onboard a new developer. How can I best do that? And what are some best practices here? And I have a lot more experience in this area because I've spun up a lot of different hires and contractors and cycled people on and off different projects. I think starting here, it's like, well, it's just the opposite of what we just talked about. So in terms of like having docs, having tests, trying to give that domain context as much as you can. But I feel like it's a lot of the same things that we talked about just from the other side of that conversation,
so,
if you will.
So one of the things that I did for this project that I was on was I had a bunch of looms. What's the plural of loom?
I think it's looms. Yeah, this is a screen recording tool. I think we've talked about it ad nauseum on this channel, on this podcast. But that idea, like these screen recordings. So you had a bunch of screen recordings.
Yeah, so I had a bunch of screen recordings just because I like giving them to the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the, not employer, the stakeholder.
Client?
I guess. Yeah, the client, the stakeholder.
Yeah, stakeholder, client. Yeah, so you like giving these screen recordings to the client or stakeholders, yeah.
And I happen to be onboarding a new developer who's going to be helping me because I just like don't have bandwidth and there are not enough hours in the day.
Of course.
And I randomly had basically like three videos that were each 15 or so minutes long. Because I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be onboarding someone soon. And my client's expecting an update. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just like spend a couple of minutes out of my day and record kind of like from start to end each big chunk of the app.
So like that the will golden serve, path.
Yeah. So that will serve two purposes. One, it's a nice way of like, you know, zooming out really, really far and then showing the client like, okay, this is like where we're at holistically, because usually when I send these videos, it's kind of just a small piece of the app in isolation.
Right.
Like, hey, check out
like
this.
Here's
feature.
The new task checkoff animation. That's like a tiny little feature. Yeah,
exactly. And I was like, oh, and you know, I'm onboarding a new dev, so this will actually. So I need to like keep that in mind for when I record this, because you know, then I could like show the nuances or you know a little bit more functionality. And I thought that was like super helpful. To have these like the set of videos just so that you can see how the app works. I think it's like one thing to, you know, talk at a high level of like what the domain objects are, but to see that in practice, like, hey, this is how you create objects. This is how you go through the purchase flow. This is what the auth flow looks like. And actually clicking on buttons and seeing things happen, I think is good for overall context. Now, I don't know if that's true, if I'm just like saying that because I think it's useful.
No, I can speak from experience that it's true because I've onboarded devs in the same code base and given a video like that and also not given videos like that. And it makes a world of difference in understanding the end-to-end system. And actually, I try to do that every 60 days or so when I'm doing a software development project. Here's the current entire flow and document that on the README, especially when you're in early days of a startup, the whole process flow and functionality just change so much. And having that reminder of, hey, here's a 20-minute walkthrough of first 10 minutes of an admin and how to set up and configure the site. And then here's 10 minutes as an end user of this site and like the high level of everything. And I've had so much value in giving that to stakeholders, just like as a reminder, like, hey, here's a current refreshed walkthrough of the whole system. Clients love seeing that and love seeing how much work you've done and how much they change and evolve over time. And it gives so much context to onboarding new devs. It's really huge and helpful. And I think the other thing is giving context that's not just code. So a lot of what we've been talking about through these videos and some of the docs we talked about is giving context into the specifics of this code base. But let's back up a bit into trying to give a new dev domain context. So understanding what is this business, where does it fit to in the real world, and how does it work in the real world? A big win there, I think, is giving competitor comparisons. So like, we are like this product, but change this thing, or we are like this product in this way, and giving competitors is a really good way. I think second, like there's so many great articles and resources that just give like industry context. So I'm in the service industry, and so I have this doc that I keep updated that's literally called Platform History and Context. And I keep this doc updated about every 2 weeks with like, what are the current objectives? how do we fit into the context of the industry? What are the current like business results we're trying to drive? And I keep that doc updated, and that's for potential hires. That's been referenced for investors. And like, this is similar to what we're talking about, but it's not necessarily code specific, although it has a small section about our technology and code base. It's more about what the hell is this company? Why does it exist? And what are we trying to do? And what do we compare to? And also, like, here's some links about the home services industry in general, just so you can understand more, like, who out there runs home service business? What does the profile of our end users look like? And so I think having a doc like that, it could be in your README, it could be a different doc, goes a really long way to try to explain it. And I have had in the past support coders watch YouTube videos about industries. I know for that sports betting project, I was watching a bunch of online sports betting videos. And I think the other thing too is like, use it. I remember working in that project specifically, like I placed some online sports bets and like used some sports books just to like figure it out. I turned $20 into $100, by the way. It was pretty cool. Don't bet. But I think that it's important to think not just about the code, but bigger about the entire domain context in general.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that. I didn't realize that I had actually done exactly that when I was onboarding this dev. We had like an hour long Google Hangout, and I was like, let me just go to Covers. So I went to Covers, and I was
which is like a big online sports pick site.
And so I was like, check this out. This is like how they filter picks. And if I want to purchase a pick, you know, this is how I do it. And then I was like, and to give you more context, like you have to realize that there's two sides to the story. It's not just like picks, but there's also like sports betting. So like there's, you can buy a pick, but then you don't just that's not the end of the story, right? Like you have to do something with that. You're just
with
purchasing
that pick. The information's useless unless you do something with it.
Right. And you know, because there's a huge distinction there, it's like, this is probably something important to know. Now, does that really relate to the code base at all? Like yes and no, but I think it's like just little things like that that can really just like let your brain understand the project a little bit more.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about first PRs. So both way, as a contributor to a new code base, like writing your first PR, what kind of issues you should do, some considerations, and then also reviewing someone's first PR. Let's talk through that a little bit. Do you have any thoughts there?
Yeah. So I think, so I'm going to share my experience with first PRs on code bases, and let me know if you've experienced something similar. I feel like, and I'm not talking about like the README PR or because like the first PR I did this new place was I updated the environment variables. I'm not talking about
you,
that.
You like fix a typo.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like your first real feature.
Yeah.
And more often than not, I feel like that first real feature was something that you pair programmed with. So for example, my first PR, I'm pretty sure in some form or another, it was basically like, here, let me hold your hand and let me go through how data flows through this app. Here, we'll make like a Postman request, and then you could see how the server handles that. So like this Postman request hits some service, and then this service spits out some data, and then you take this data, the front end receives it, and then from there, here's how you finally get this data and display it on the app. So like that whole life cycle, I think, more often than not, my first PRs have been literally somebody holding my hand and just telling me exactly what I need
to do. What to do, yeah.
Which I think is super helpful because it's not like, oh, I'm insulting your intelligence. It's like, hey, here's how you see how this app works from end to end. And I've found that, you know, being on the receiving end of that, super, super helpful. So when the roles are reversed, I try to do the same thing.
Like request someone to pair with you if at all possible. Oh no, I got it. Like when you are the one onboarding a new dev, you try to do the same thing. Man, I wish I would have heard that tip before. I have never even thought to do that, which I love pairing. I do pairing all the time, but I've never really thought about it for a onboarding dev's first PR. And I'm thinking about this new support coder we hired a few weeks ago, and she onboarded, she's incredible. She's super talented, but her first PR took a long time to like, the first issue took her a long time. And I felt like it was a really easy issue. And I gave as much context as I could for her to like really knock it out of the park. Actually, both of the more recent developers I brought on, like their first issues took them a long time and a lot of back and forth. And I think to some degree, like that's good. You kind of learn the hard way and jump into the deep end. But at the same time, like, how much would it have better if it would have been to just hop on a call for a 90 minutes and just do that first PR together to get all that context? Because we did it kind of async, doing, I was like four rounds of code reviews on both those first PRs, and it would have been way more productive and just exciting and engaging to just pair on it. So this is a good tip, and it's definitely something I'll do next time I'm onboarding a new dev, for sure.
Yeah, I think a good thing there too is to kind of expose the tooling that you use, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you as a developer who's already on this project, what does your workflow look like?
Like, yeah. Something like Prettier.js, like, do you use it or not? And where do you run the test? Do you let them run in continuous integration? Do you run the test locally? All that kind of nuance. Shit, man. I can't believe I dropped the ball on that one. This is a good hot tip.
Yeah, it's like, do you have Postman up? Do you have Rails console up? Do you have do you have logs up? Like, what are you actually doing when you develop? And I've noticed that it's easy for that stuff to get lost because, like, as a developer who's on a project already, it's kind of just like second nature to you, right? Like, you kind of just like throw Postman up, you throw your Jot token in there, whatever. But like, for someone who's new, who has like absolutely no idea coming into like this new environment, it's not that you don't know how to do it. It's just that like, you don't know that you need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's so good for like morale and camaraderie off the bat too. Getting that and getting those initial questions. You're so right. Like, those little things of getting the little token in the right place in Postman, like all that little stuff gives so much context on a quick screen share. Yeah, that's a really good tip. Awesome. So let's try to sum this up. If you're coming into a new code base, what's the kind of hit list of things you want to remember? Let's try to summarize that, JP.
Okay. First thing is domain context.
Mm.
And then I would say domain context, documentation reading.
Yeah, read the docs.
I would say understanding how data flows through the app. So it's like from the request all the way to the response and all the way to what do I do with that response?
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. And then for onboarding someone else into your code base, I think it's the exact opposite of that. It's like, support it with docs all that you can. Support it with all the kind of domain context that you can. And then maybe for the first pull request, which is something I haven't done, pair on that first one. So that first issue, you keep their morale up and they really have a lot of understanding coming into that. Now, this last one here then, I actually have a follow-up question on the idea of pairing on that first PR. I would guess then in that first PR, there's not really a code review then, because you paired on it, like there's not really much review happening. Do you have any thoughts on doing code reviews for others the first time around? Which I think code reviews in general might require its own podcast episode sometime, but do you have any thoughts on like providing a first PR, like review?
Any tips for code review on that first PR? Usually that first PR is just like, I'll just merge it when it's green kind of a thing, because you and I paired on this thing, so we can both say that like it's good. It's kind of like patting yourself on, like you're patting each other's backs kind of a thing. But yeah, we can definitely have a full episode. I think we've had an episode on code reviews. I don't know. Maybe we need to do a second one.
Yeah, maybe we need to do an update. Well, awesome. This has been some tips about onboarding or helping onboard others onto a new code base. I hope you guys found that helpful. We're going to move into a couple picks here. So what's your first pick you've got, JP?
Oh, I got a great pick. So I found this on Reddit. Now, what this is, it's an app called Meter. And I realize that saying that out loud, you probably have no idea what the hell I'm saying. So it's spelled M-E-E-T-R, I think. Is it like a cool hip startup?
M-E-E-T-E-R.
E-R. Okay, for some reason.
Yeah, it's got all its vowels.
Yeah, it's not like it cut out the second to the last one like most cool startups. So what this does is it's basically an extension for Mac users that puts a little widget in your like toolbar thing at the top of your screen, and it will tell you all of your upcoming Zoom and Google Hangout and Google Meet.
Oh, that's nice.
Like upcoming calls. And if you want to join it, you just click this little button that says join Google Hangouts or join Zoom call, which is amazing because normally I have like my calendar tell me that like, oh, I have an upcoming call, and then I have to like click this link, and then it opens up like a thing, and I have to click another thing. But this just tells me all of my upcoming meetings. And what's also cool about it is it tells you time until your next meeting. So for example, I was like, oh, my, you know, this podcast recording is going to be in 45 minutes kind of a thing. I don't know, all about those productivity tools.
Yeah, this is definitely a problem I run into all the time because I feel like the Google Calendar, it'll tell me like 30 minutes before. I'm like, okay, cool, I have a meeting upcoming. And then I'll start coding and then I code over and then I always join meetings like 2 minutes late because I go, oh shit, my meeting just started. But having that like countdown timer of all the upcoming meetings, that's super helpful. And I installed this while you were describing it and it's already set up and configured on my Mac. Like I see Iteration podcast recording joint with a button, join Google Hangouts. Like that's super sweet. Wow, great pick. I love this one. Cool. My pick for this week is, it's pretty Rails specific, but it's also just a really interesting development pattern that I'm really excited about. So Rails has this new thing that is going live in Rails 6.2, I think. So in the next month or so, it's going to be merged to master, which is Rails Vue components. And by Vue, I don't mean Vue, the JavaScript framework, but I mean V-I-E-W, like the word Vue. And so it's this new pattern in Rails to produce reusable front-end partials, but they're a lot more abstracted and reusable across different models. So if you're familiar with Rails, you could always have this idea of a partial, like here's my user partial, and I can use that partial in different places. But now you can have something like, let's say like a list item partial, and it's more powerful and abstracted than a helper. And if you use Stimulus.js, there's a lot of best practices on how to tie together that with a lot of JavaScript for more advanced interactions. So I am really loving this because I feel like it is still HTML, but it is in a more composable and reusable way that allows you to have things like, I'll give it a quick example. We are working on a lot of wizard forms, so like multi-step forms. And that takes a lot of code to do that well, like autosave progress, all those different things, and have different question types in each form partial. And so we have about three different objects that we currently have wizard form data collection. Like here's all the attributes we're collecting against three different objects. And now we have rewritten that all into Rails view components. So it's a single Rails view component that serves all three of those underlying objects into this like very interactive walkthrough wizard that does your progress and all the validations and all of that. I have to give props to Manuel, who is a lead developer on our team, who found this and really implemented that well. But I am loving this pattern, and it's so nice to work in, and it feels like a really good next step for Rails. So I'm super excited about it.
Wow, and you said this is going to be in Rails 6.1?
I think it's 6.2 or 6.1, whatever the next release is, it's going to be in. It's already merged to master, so it's super exciting.
Wow, that's, yeah. I'm excited. So this project
and
that
we're already
I'm on,
using it in production, and we're loving using it in production. We're just using it off the gem for now, and so when it goes to master, we'll just remove the gem, and we're good to go.
Wow, that's really cool. I'm actually trying to get off of React components on this project that I'm working on, or I was working on, and now it's like I'm slowly getting back to just ERB. That way, if I ever decide like, hey, I want to add stimulus, or hey, I want to add something else, I can just like go ahead and do that. Because like React and Rails, I'm just going to say it, it's like, it's icky. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. It's too much.
I think if you're going to do it, just go full headless. Like having like React mixed into Rails, it doesn't feel right to me. That's it feels like a Frankenstein to me, the little bit I've interacted with it. I don't have enough experience there. But anyway, that's my pick. I'm loving it. I think it's a good new pattern. I think that's it. Let's wrap it. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next episode. If you want to learn more about the show, you can visit iterationpodcast.com, and you can find JP and I's Twitters. You can find previous episodes. If there is one on pull request reviews, it'll be there. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
See ya.